Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm Paul Garenza.
I'm John Sands.
And this is our special guest for this week.
Jez Gibson.
There you go, exactly. Jez is joining us this week. Jenny is not here.
But we swapped a letter.
Exactly, Jez, it's close enough. That'll do. So, yes, delighted to have you, Jez. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You're a film fan?
Film buff extraordinaire.
Wonderful. I think we should check your credentials at this stage, just to make sure.
Are you looking for an actual sort of card?
Well, not an actual card or anything.
I am a monthly subscriber to Empire magazine.
Oh, really? Oh, dear, that bad, eh? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Pretty good qualifications.
One of those. Yeah.
Mind you, I am, but I also never read it.
I should be a subscriber, because I get it. I buy every month anyway from the shop.
Oh, see.
But then pay for
it. Well, to save me cancelling my subscription, because I never read it.
I'll just
buy it off
me.
Yeah,
that'll do. Yeah,
that'll work.
I keep waiting, because every month they do a special thing where if you subscribe this month, you get a box set,
yes,
whatever. I always look at it and then think, oh, do I want that box set? Nah, I'm gonna hold off until.
So in the meantime, the amount that you, because you save money on subscriptions anyway.
Yeah.
So the by buying it each month, the amount that you haven't saved on subscriptions, so you might have spent about 30 quid extra.
Yeah.
In order to get a 10 quid bonus.
I don't know what I'm waiting for exactly. I think I'm waiting for the complete Bond box set or something like that. They're never
right,
gonna do.
That's never gonna happen.
Every week it's always, you know, you can get both Weekend at Bernie's films if you subscribe. This month.
Jim
Actually,
Carrey
I get that. To be fair, I do that. I'd do it for that. I definitely would. I think I subscribed to Good Housekeeping for two Weekend at Bernie's films. I'd have
oh,
it.
Oh, dear.
I definitely have it.
Would you agree that the quality of Empire magazine has, in fact, slidden over the last few years to being more of a film lad's mag rather than cutting edge?
I'm not really in a position to comment, given that I never read it. I have so many. About one issue in four I probably read, and the rest sort of go unopened because I've got so much stuff to read and just don't get around.
It's getting that way, I suppose. Good use of the word slidden, by the way. That.
Thank you.
Is that a real word, or is that just...
It is now.
Fair enough.
Well done. Yeah, no, I suppose it is getting a bit that way, but I don't know. The thing is, each month I look at the other one's premiere, and there's a new one out as well called... Something, I don't know what it's called now. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
There's a new film magazine. It's like
a Total
issue two.
Film, but that's been out for a while.
Total Film, yeah. Which is...
been out for a while.
Total Film, very lads, Maggie, I think.
Yeah.
At least Empire's got a bit of class to it.
And then Sight and Sound, you actually need to do a PhD in the study of films.
Well, yeah. Sight and Sound, I bought Sight and Sound once, and I think I got into one article, and by the second sentence, it lost me. It was like reading A Brief History of Time. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Very, very good, but a bit...
A little bit, little bit.
But if there's a new one out, I should add them to my press mailing list.
Have a look in the shops. It seems missing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all good.
Empire, I think, is still sort of the most respected.
I think
really.
It is. I think it is.
As proof of their, was it their 20th anniversary special where they had Steven Spielberg editing
and
all that stuff?
Yeah. And it was actually very, very good.
It was a good issue, that was.
Yeah, they still carry a lot of weight.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, well, delighted to have you on here, Jez.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
And so, I'm just thinking, we don't see a card or anything. But could you give us, like, you know, have you got any, what sort of films you like particularly, just so the listener knows, you know, are you a highbrow, you know, are we going to get into words you don't understand, like Sight and Sound? Are you Sight and Sound, man, or are you more of a...
I'm probably Empire magazine.
You're probably Empire magazine. You're in the middle.
I like a bit of popcorn with my film now again. I like a bit of escapism.
But you're getting slightly laddier as the years go by.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Too many subtitles can be a bad thing.
Right, okay. Fair enough.
But I would like to see Man on Wire.
We reviewed that the previous week.
Yes, and that's on TV, actually.
Is it really?
In the UK, it's on Sunday, I think.
It's on TV on Sunday.
Oh, yes. See that.
Good to know.
Yeah,
good
film.
Anyway, welcome, listeners, and thank you for joining us. This week we're going to talk about The Proposal.
Yes.
And Moon.
Yes.
And then some banter.
And then some other films.
Yeah.
I saw The Game on TV last night.
I haven't seen
that in a long time.
And who's the woman in it?
Deborah Kara Unger.
Good knowledge. Well done.
The stupid thing is, even without looking it up, I knew that name. Because I was watching it and suddenly thought, oh, yeah, because she was in Crash around the same time.
Yeah.
The David Cronenberg one, not the Oscar-winning one.
Yeah.
And the game. Mm. And just thought, oh, she hasn't done much since. And then looked her up on the IMDb. It turns out she has done quite a lot, just nothing I've actually seen. But so she has been working since.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a name that shouldn't just be at the forefront of my mind.
Deborah Kara Unger.
Deborah Kara Unger.
I do occasionally get a longing to see a film of her. I occasionally get Unger pangs. Hey, kids. Hey.
I can only apologise.
I'm so sorry.
Paul's working on a new Edinburgh show, and clearly...
Is it show?
Yeah. Although, if that's the standard we can expect, you're
going to
get an audience of nothing.
It's going to get better. It can't get much worse. So, some bits of admin. Now, I was chatting with a writer friend of mine this week, Mr. James Carey. Hello, James, if you're listening. I know he does listen occasionally. And he said he's missed the admin. He wanted more admin. We used to do a lot of admin on the show.
We've been overdosing on actual films.
I know, exactly.
So now admin banter is back.
So a bit of admin for you. First bit of admin, I want to plug a couple of podcasts. Now, I know we should plug podcasts particularly on this, but I'm actually on another podcast this week called The Green Room Podcast, which is backstage in UK comedy clubs. And that's Mr. Phil Butler, comedian, presents that. So yeah, well worth a listen. Get on iTunes. They're quite new. They're starting out. They're just making little podcast footsteps.
Not veterans like us.
Not veterans like us.
Mind you, we've done like 30, this is our 37th podcast.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Which, yeah, that's fairly good going.
Yeah. So, in fact, the podcast I'm on, the Greenman podcast, it's myself and Phil Butler and Paul B. Edwards, who is a veteran podcast. He's been going for 200 podcasts.
Wow.
And that's called Punky Podcast, I think. Punky World, I think it is. So you can find that as well. But yes, that's good. And also, I got an email read out this week on Mark Commode and Simon Mayo's podcast. Yeah, I've arrived. Oh, yes, rock and roll. So I was the Paul mentioned in the first about 8 minutes. I didn't give a surname because I said Paul at Movie Banter, for Movie Banter, hoping they'd read out. And they didn't.
They didn't. Dull.
It's because we're rivals. They're afraid of us. They know that we could take over. Yes. So yeah, there was an email. I hate the fact I gave them the new, you know, gave them the breaking story first.
Well, that's true.
Before this podcast.
No, it went on our website first.
It's on our website first.
That's true, yeah.
This was about when I went to see Moon last week, and three seats to my left was Tim Roth, and three seats to my right was Kevin McNally. From Parts of the Caribbean. So, yeah, it was cool. And it was just a normal screening, you know, not a premiere, just a Monday afternoon.
Was it just the three of you in the cinema?
There was about 20 of us, I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure no one else noticed that those two were there.
How would you... I mean, presumably you didn't stand and go, "You're Tim Roth, you're Kevin McNally." So if no one else did that either, no one would think that you'd notice they were there.
Well, good point. I kept glancing over, though.
Oh, I see. And no one else seemed to be looking and nudging each other.
No, no one sort of got Tim Roth to sort of, you know... lead on the back seat of a car,
did you try lying to him?
Lying to him about what?
It's his new TV show. You're obviously very uninformed.
Oh, yes, Lie
area.
To Me.
Lie to Me, where
Tim oh, is that right?
Is yes. Some sort of psychologist, and
he
has to interview people and then gauge whether they're lying or not.
Oh, is that right? Could be.
Lying to us.
Maybe.
You could just be making up this entire story.
I am indeed, actually, yeah.
At the same time, you probably would have picked someone, no disrespect to Tim Roth, but slightly more current than
Tim Roth. My only gossip I ever heard with it was Kevin McNally was there with his kid, I think. And I hope it was.
dear, see, this is taking an unfortunate turn now.
That bit at the start, the trailer's finished. And the if you're listening, Kevin, apologies. The trade at the
what you mean is it might have been his nephew.
Might is exactly
yes, exactly. Some stranger he just picked up off the street.
No. I feel bad enough. I'm reporting in on his family life, let alone giving it.
Might not be his, it's not his family life.
No, exactly.
Anyway,
maybe the kid kidnapped him. I don't know. But anyway, you know the bit where the curtain comes across after the trailers?
Yes.
And it was just about, it was a couple of minutes, it was like, which is normally quite a long time, not like 30 seconds, it's 2 minutes. And he was just moaning loudly to his kids saying, "Oh, they're not normally like this. No, normally they're much quicker than this." Either implying that his son, let's presume, has never been to the cinema before,
very
and
true.
Saying normally it's quicker.
Could be.
Or he was showing off about Hollywood and saying in Hollywood it's quicker. You know?
Okay. See, how old did his son appear to be?
Early teen?
Oh, fair enough. In which case, he must have been to the cinema before. I think if he's never been to the cinema before, then and he's also quite young, then Moon is probably a bit of a weird one as film.
True, but it's a fine movie, actually. It's a fine movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a fine movie. It's going to be difficult for people to see. That's the problem, because it's not in many cinemas. This was in the middle of London. But it's we've mentioned, I think last week, actually, it was a preview on Movie Banter last week, and now it's a review. Now I've seen it, but it's Sam Rockwell and not many others.
Yes, Kevin Spacey's voice.
Kevin Spacey's voice as the computer. There's lots of nods to different sci-fi films. That's 2001, very obvious sort of HAL reference with Kevin Spacey doing it. But it's a really, really sweet... I don't say sweet, it sounds quite patronising, but it's just a lovely, tight, small, short, small cast, small budget movie.
Right.
Where actually, because it's nowadays we've got the technology to do it, they can do a small independent movie like this, and the effects are very, very good. I wasn't left wanting at all for CGI or anything particularly. They did it all, I think it was in Pinewood Studios, during the writer's strike, because lots of American movies then stopped filming over here, so they nipped in for, you know, cut price rates. And yes, it's all largely sort of built there, the sort of the Moon background and all that. And they don't skimp at all on making it look good. It does look genuinely good. It looks like the Moon surface. And the plot of it, you know, I don't want to go into too much, because part of the joy of it is discovering as it goes. But I think it's quite well documented what the sort of the twist is. But it is an early twist in the film, so it's not like it's the ending. You've ruined the ending.
I think it's even in the trailer we see.
I think it is in the trailer, actually. But that's fine. It's just the setup of the film.
But the gist is just this man alone on a moon base.
Pretty much. And he discovers a body, and that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, there is some very, very clever visual effects, without, again, giving away what the body is he finds. But and all I will say is the shot of them playing ping pong together is just showing off. Very well done, but they're going, that's just... it's almost like in that scene, the dialogue is not as important in that scene.
Yeah.
Because the filmmakers know full well, we're not listening to the dialogue, we're just going, how the hell is he playing ping pong with that person that I won't reveal?
Right.
But, it's obviously him. it's just a lovely movie, and it's one of those to really seek out on DVD and just support as well, because it's a really nice British independent film that needs support and deserves it. I fully expect to see it on my top 10 favourite list at the end of the year. It's an excellent film.
Hi, Brendan.
A debut film by the director? Or?
Debut film. It's Duncan Jones, who is David Bowie's son, in fact. I heard him say in an interview that there's actually, although it's obviously his dad was quite obsessed with space and Ziggy Stardust and Space Oddity, he actually set out to make a film deliberately nothing to do with his dad, David Bowie. And then suddenly, it's only when he was finished it and was doing the first bit of publicity, and someone said, so why is it, you and your dad both obsessed with space, clearly? And he thought, oh yeah, I didn't realise that. I was trying to get away from all that stuff, but never mind. But I'm glad he didn't, because it's a lovely little film, and it's one of these, it's very satisfying by the very sort of the last scene, the credits roll, and it all fits together. And it's just a lovely, it's a very nice moment where you go and see a film like that, like, I don't know, Usual Suspects or something like that, where you end and go, that's satisfying. Ending satisfies me. And it was one of those. So, and Sam Rockwell is just brilliant, really. Deserves, not for this film particularly, but just generally, he deserves awards.
Yeah.
He's not been Oscar nominated yet, and he should be, really.
No, very true. I mean, I saw this week a bit of Charlie's Angels, which was on TV. And was reminded, I enjoy the film despite its rubbishness, but was reminded, I think that may be the first film I saw Sam Rockwell in, because he'd done things before then. I think The Green Mile was the year before, but I didn't actually see that until afterwards. Yes, brilliant film.
Very good.
But that's the first film that Sam Rockwell made an impression on me anyway, despite it being a very lightweight, frivolous film. But just thought, he's really very good in this as that role.
Yeah.
And so, it's just now 9 years later, he's still not quite... reached the level which he deserves to be, but hopefully this will get him the recognition he deserves.
The other one I was seeing out the other day was that film Choke, which was out
not seen that.
And again, that was a flawed bit of work, I think, in many ways. Largely, it was I think it was based on a novel, and about this guy obsessed with sex, and therefore lots of scenes of him just finding some random woman and just having sex with her. But the scenes that weren't all entirely pornographic were actually very, very well conveyed by Sam Rockwell, he was the character. It looked like he was just existing. But to be fair, he probably saw the script and thought, sounds good to me.
Brilliant. I mean,
count me in. He's really quite a wonderful actor. Fine movie. Recommend movie.
Cool. I'll have to seek it out. You talking about your other comedy career, just bring my mistake spottingness back. I got a message on Twitter this week from the guy who runs Blockbuster Buzz, which is the Times Online new film bit, just saying, don't know if anyone's pointed this out yet, but in Moon they misspell satellite in it. Apparently on the screen that he's looking at, it says the word satellite. Although he said it's not that, actually you didn't notice it.
I haven't noticed it, no.
But
no,
this guy clearly did, and having not seen it, can't.
Of course.
But it's clearly there somewhere.
Ooh.
And yes, they misspell satellite. I think, because satellite is meant to have one T and two L's.
Yes.
I think, trying to picture the word.
Two T's, one at the start, one at the end.
But together. Yeah. And they spell it with three T's and one L.
Five L's.
Five L's.
Two Z's.
Six Q's.
In fact, it's not the word satellite.
That's right. I know. Yeah. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe there's another word inside. That's not how you spell satellite.
They spelt it computer. How rubbish. It's got a T and an E in it, but it's the wrong place entirely.
Any mistake spotting fans out there, give that a look if you go and see me.
Yes. Speaking of Twitter, you can follow us on Twitter.
Oh yes, please do,
dear listeners. Yes, we're all new meded up here now. You see, so you can go to twitter.com/moviebanter and find us there. Follow us, and or if you just see us in the street, just follow us as well.
True.
And we'll tweet over our shoulders at you. So that one works as well. And equally, you can email us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk if you have any constructive criticisms
or anything else.
Anything.
Yes, and also, as a result, tied into the email address, the website is moviebanter.co.uk. But we're starting to post more film news and trailers and bits and pieces on there, so we can't make claims to being a major high-level news film news website yet. There's stuff to read there beyond just the podcast, so give it a look. Well, just one thought as well, relating to Twitter. Do you want to plug your own Twitter account as well?
Oh, yeah, I could do that. Yeah, I've got a Twitter account, twitter.com/PaulCarenza. That's K-E-R-E-N-S-A. Get that right.
Yes, and for comedy things and other posting.
Stuff like that.
And mine is twitter.com/MovieMistakes, because that's my main website.
Jay, are you on Twitter?
No.
Heard of Twitter?
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Any plans to join Twitter?
No.
No, fair enough. Exactly, yeah.
On Sunday, I saw my parents and my grandmother and was...
Is your gran on Twitter?
Well, no, but I have the issue I always have, given that I sort of run websites, do computer things, and my parents just about get the internet and use it a bit. My gran obviously doesn't at all. But with anything relating to what I do, it always involves layers of explanation, trying to explain, firstly, what I've done week, and then why that's important, and then how it relates to anything else. And was talking about Twitter, trying to explain it as best I could to my poor grandmother, who was trying her best. And she got the gist.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she knows full well she'll never use it. She has no interest in it.
Yeah.
So I was just watching her eyes slowly glaze over.
Oh, no.
No, but it was fine, because I knew that was going to happen. So I just sort of gave her the 3-sentence summary and then backed off.
See, the thing with Twitter is, it's the easiest way I think I found to describe it is, it's like just the Facebook status update. And just that. It's more than that, of course, but it is.
But
to do that, you've then got to explain what Facebook is to the person as well. So that's
but also, because the Twitter... founders started off saying, oh, it's another social network, and it's sort of not really, and now they're saying it's a communications tool, and that makes far more sense to me.
Because
I mean, people I follow on Twitter, I'll occasionally just post replies to them, they'll write something, I'll write a reply, they might ignore it or they might reply back, and then you get, and it happened last night with a topic which we may bring up later on, and also the comedian Richard Herring, who we saw this week, who's quite a well-known comic, and I'd never email him and expect a reply or see him in the street. But he posted something on Twitter, I posted a reply, he wrote back to me.
Yeah.
And it's just a bit of a two-way discussion.
It's a banter, isn't it?
So it is a way to contact people who you wouldn't normally contact.
Yeah.
And, network and share stuff. So there is... I now get the point of it.
Right. I'm halfway there. I'm nearly there.
I'm not
talking about this retweeting and this...
No, fair enough.
All that sort of thing.
I think, if nothing else, if people join Twitter and just pick people they're interested in, news sources they're interested in, websites they like, and just follow them, you don't have to write anything, you don't have to feel, I must tell you what I'm having for breakfast. You can just sit there and read stuff.
Yeah.
So use it that way, and there's a lot to get out of it.
Fair point. So if you're on Twitter, you can find us there. Or as I say, you can email us, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk, as indeed... these people did.
Aha! Nice link.
See what I did there. So your emails. Back into the admin. Your emails. Now back to the admin. We've had an email this week from Super Toys. Hey, Super Toys. That's my favourite sort of toys. The super ones. I like those ones. He said, in regard to our discussion about historical movies or non-historical movies, it kind of multiple point as well.
Yes.
He says, if I know from the beginning and the movie isn't trying to portray it as such, then he's fine with movies set in the past. They just make things up as they go along. Because we talk about Year One with regard to this, and also Angels and Demons.
Yes.
And these sort of films that sort of rewrite history, but don't tell you that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
But like Super Toy says, he says, I just watched Young Guns for the first time. Fine film. But he's a bit disappointed because of the way they just move time around to make their story. Then saying, really looking forward to Inglourious Bastards, the new Quentin Tarantino film. Although that's looking like it might do a similar thing with history.
Yes, but I think that does it so blatantly that it's so obvious that's what they're doing, and they're just sort of, hey, it's just a fictional idea.
As long as it's sort of clear, I think that's the thing, isn't it, really? He likens new Quentin Tarantino film is like new socks after a wet, rainy afternoon, which is sort of true, but more blood and swearing, I think.
True. That does also imply that the last 6 years since Kill Bill have been one long, wet, rainy afternoon.
Well, it has in this country.
Well, yes, that's very true.
Email from Jed, fan of the show, long-term friend of the show. Anyway, Jed is talking about favourite child performances in a film. This is Desert Island Flicks from a week or two ago. Favourite child performance, and a fine one he suggests, which we didn't cover, The Late River Phoenix, the opening sequence of Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. Having previously played Harrison Ford's son in Mosquito Coast, he was able to inhabit the role of a younger Ford just well, and lended believability to the hijinks on the circus train. Very, very true.
And I think because there was then Young Indiana Jones, which followed that film.
Yes.
And did that star River Phoenix, or was it going to star River Phoenix and then he died? I vaguely recall that the opening of that sequence was kind of a semi-setup for the TV show. Yeah. I don't think it did star him because he died. Well, after a quick check online, say River Phoenix didn't star in it, no. Nor was he going to. He was offered the role of doing it.
Yeah.
So clearly that was
turned
one
it
of
down,
the premises.
Didn't go back to TV. So, yes. Yes. Yeah. But I think I'm pretty sure that when they actually did that in the Indiana Jones film, it was with a view for him carrying it on at some point.
I would have thought. I mean, it makes sense. It's a slightly cynical commercial idea. Or reasoning for it. I mean, it works for the film.
Well,
I'd
say a bit like Shia LaBeouf was in the most recent one, that clearly they're sort of trying to groom him for the future Indiana Jones films, but it didn't work for me. Didn't work for me.
No.
Another one that Jed suggests a good child performance is Haley Joel Osment, who got his start as Forrest Gump Jr. in Forrest Gump.
Really?
I did not know that, but there you are. Nice to know. The film that stands out for me is AI, Artificial Intelligence. He is very good in that.
Yes.
Which has to be one of the most demanding child roles in history. Osment lent genuine pathos to the film and was definitely helped by having Jude Law as his co-star. Speaking of Forrest Gump, there is Michael Connor Humphreys, who has memorably portrayed the young Forrest and not much else. And what Jed tells me, I did not know, is that Forrest's accent actually came from Connor Humphreys, and then Tom Hanks based it on the kid. Yeah. So that's pretty good, isn't it? So thank you, Jed. Final email this week from Blair. Hello again to my favourite banterers.
Hello. Oh.
He says that I loved your review of Half-Blood Prince, enjoyed the fact you also noticed how suggestive Ginny kneeling down in front of Harry to tie his shoe was. Oh dear, oh
well,
dear, oh dear.
It just was.
Oh dear, oh dear. A few of the parents in the cinema I saw it in sniggered at it. Tut, tut, tut. With your kids there. Whether it was intentional innuendo or not, surely they would have realised how some people would have read into it. Well, they must
things,
have
I'm sure they did.
They must have realised.
Well, I think it's one of those jokes they can probably... Because children won't... Anyone of an age to understand it is essentially old enough to get the joke.
Yeah.
And if you're not old enough to see why that's funny, then you won't see anything wrong with it.
Yes, yeah.
So it's sort of an innocent joke in that respect.
I guess.
Sort of an under-the-radar joke.
Innocent enough.
Well, yes, but why... What's...
Until you go with your older teen brother who yells out the screen while you're down there, love. And then, you know, that's it's not
well,
as innocent
yes.
as it could be, but there you are. Yeah.
But it was funny, and therefore...
Well, there is that.
That's my general benchmark. If it's funny, then they should do it.
Blair continues. Also surprising to me was the amount of drinking in the film. Slughorn and Hagrid get drunk. Slughorn shares a drink with Harry and Ron, and Hermione acts a little oddly after the scene in which she quickly downs her butterbeer.
Yeah, see, that's right, because not being a Harry Potter devotee, I don't really know the principles of butterbeer, whether it's actual beer, or because I can't imagine it's meant to be alcoholic. And yet, she was acting fairly drunk after that.
Mm.
But at the same time, I think he mentioned in his email later on, saying it's because the films are getting older and more mature, so they need to start grazing these topics.
Yes, true.
Because the books did the same. I mean, I think the books are kind of meant to age as the readers do.
Mm.
So, yeah, it makes sense they should start covering more mature topics.
Yes. Fair point. Yeah, so who knows where they'll be by the next film?
Well, very true.
Don't even think.
Well, because by the end of the book, it's kind of the end of the school year, maybe, so they're all 18.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen
then. Hermione will be pregnant and, you know... Ron will be off the rails. Well, to be fair, you know, the last couple of weeks, one of the big bully in the film, the fat guy.
Oh yeah, the sort of
he's been he was arrested for drug dealing, and he's now doing a suspended sentence for that. So yeah, you know, clearly they're all grown up and they're dealing with life and whatever it throws at them,
possibly drugs
or whatever they smoke to try and get through it. So yeah. Thank you for your email, Blair, and yes, well, do email the show if you want to get in touch with us. podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes.
What now?
Desert Island Flicks this week. Well, this stems from a conversation I had via Twitter again with someone. I think it was someone called Geeks of Doom.
If you're listening to Geeks of Doom, do get in touch.
Well, yes, and if it wasn't you, then I apologise, but I haven't got it to reference. But again, it's like My Name is Movie Mistakes. It's just that's the website they run. And he posed the question, essentially, in order for a sequel to be a truly great film, it has to stand alone as a film. It just set me thinking, and I thought, well, that's probably true, as in it's good for a film to stand alone.
Yeah.
But I still like, I think I've had this discussion with you before, actually, Paul, that I like the idea of a film that doesn't stand alone, that ties in very closely to an original film.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to have seen one to understand the other. Mm. But that may just be me liking epic stories, possibly. But I don't know why that appeals to me, but it just does. But I was trying to think of a film that is brilliant, but is a sequel, and you have to have seen the first one to make any sense of the second one, really.
Right.
And I couldn't really think of a good example.
See, I don't like those films, to be honest. I think particularly, I don't like those films when I haven't seen the original version of the film.
I think with me, it's the sense of smugness I get, thinking, oh, I've seen that first
but
film,
exactly,
so I'll understand
I always
this.
Think that every film you see should be able to stand alone on its own two feet. And things like the Harry Potter film. I've read some reviews saying a lot of people, if you haven't read the book, you'll miss out on certain elements of it. And as far as I'm concerned, those bits then shouldn't be in the film. because
yeah, I know, I can see that with a book to film, I can understand.
Well, true, but they should not, as I see it, sell tickets for a film if you walk in and go, I didn't get that. I mean, I went to, and again, it's another thing, it's different things, it's an adaptation, but I saw Silent Hill.
Oh yes,
a few years ago, just because I was had an afternoon free somewhere, hadn't heard much about it. Thought, oh, it's a horror film. I quite like a bit of horror. I'll go and see that, and wasted my time, wasted my £7 because turned out afterwards you meant to play the video game first and then you get the film.
Right,
but I'm like, I didn't know that. Nowhere does it say that.
Yeah,
and I just wasted my money. And I was actually annoyed at the filmmakers.
Oh no, I can fully agree with that in terms of films based on other mediums. You should rework the medium to make it work as a film. But you know, if something is a clear number, second number sequel,
okay. Yeah.
I think it makes sense. And if nothing else, people should then think, okay, I'll go and see the first one before I see this one. But that's not true of all. I don't think that's how all sequels should work. But I'd like to imagine that someone... But I can see why no one would ever make a sequel that really works like that, because it's not particularly marketable.
No.
But I think I just like the idea of a sort of a big... story, epic, but then that's really just a two-part film, like Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Well,
not
true.
Really a sequel, it's the same story, just continued.
Yes. Yeah, things like Lord of the Rings, for example, I enjoyed the fact that, you know, that everyone's looking forward to the third one, and it tells a great story over three long films. but also, I think you can see any one of those films independently, I'd have thought, and still get it, because there's enough in each film.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you may not exactly know why, who this character is or why, where they've come from, but you can get to grips with the characters. They're well spelled out in each film.
It was just
amusing anyway. But so the principle therefore for Desert Island Flicks this week is the most consistent franchise, really, which is a franchise that's been solidly across however many films there are of it, and it's always good across all the films. So Indiana Jones, personally, like 1, 2, 3, could have been a contender.
Yeah.
Throw in 4, and suddenly... Nah.
Die Hard, 1, 2, 3...
No, I like 4. I like 4.
They always fought at the fourth one, isn't it?
No, I personally quite enjoyed 4. But anyway, no, but it's not. I mean, it may have criticism, but it's hardly... it doesn't ruin it. Anyway, but that's what I was thinking about in terms of sequels.
Okay, so best franchise, we will...
Most consistent franchise.
Okay, so we will muse on this.
Yes. Because arguably, best franchise, Godfather 1 and 2 could, despite 3, one and 2 could be so good that it's still a good franchise.
Very true.
But it's not consistent, really. It's wildly uneven.
Thinking Weekend at Bernie's again, actually. is that wrong?
Yes.
I don't want to be right.
Anyway, but yes, that was just...
Okay,
that was
fair,
like
enough.
Desert Island Flicks.
Fair enough.
But now, we can move on to The Proposal.
The Proposal, yes.
Fair enough. I'll get down on my knee.
No.
This is Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock with some relatively unusual premise. Essentially, I think most rom-com premises have now been done. You've got to kind of start tweaking them slightly. And it's Ryan Reynolds plays Sandra Bullock's assistant. She's going to get deported because she's Canadian. Her visa's expired. So she kind of...
I'm glad you said the visa's expired. I thought just because she's Canadian.
Just because she's Canadian. That's it.
Forget him. Don't want him.
And so she... Because he's desperate to further his career. He sort of put in lots of time, despite working for her as a horrible boss. So she essentially says, unless you marry me, I'll ruin your career.
Nice.
And so he goes, oh, all right, then I'll do it. So then they have to make a convincing presentation to people that they're actually going to get married in order to work it all out. And in the process, of course, do they fall for each other? Do they not? We'll see. Having said that, let's just say it's not as obvious that that's how it's going to go. As
sounds
you watch
obvious.
It. No, yeah, it is, but because they end up going back to his parents' house, which is in Alaska, and she meets his family and sort of sees this big group that essentially she's kept him away from all these years by forcing him to work all the time, but including an ex of his. And they clearly got a bond together, him and this ex. So, yeah, it could go a different way, and there's definite connection. Anyway.
Is there a joke when Sandra Bullock says to him, where's your mum from? I hope she likes me. And he says, Alaska. And she says, great, if you would. No, Alaska. That's where they're from. Alaska.
And her name's Olivia as well, which is your second favourite.
What's your name? Olivia. I know you, Olivia. What's your name?
Yes.
That's the joke. Do they not have that joke?
No, they don't
Alaska
have that joke.
No. They should have got me as a script editor. Why do they not? Why will Hollywood not call? Sorry, I'm getting bitter
this
now.
Well, listen back to your last couple of jokes, and you'll be... rom-com, I always sort of rate them on a slightly different scale to normal films, which is unfair, but essentially they're all predictable. You always know how they're going to end.
Yeah.
And as such, it's sort of a bit harsh to say, I hated this because I knew how it was going to end, it was all obvious. which is harsh and isn't how a lot of people think, but it's how I work with them. And at one end of the scale, you've got like The Wedding Planner was probably the dullest film I've ever seen.
Right.
And then you've got Four Weddings at the other end, a sort of brilliant writing, which is one of the rare examples sort of outside of that rating.
Mm.
And The Proposal, I'd count as above average, because it's got a bit like 2 weeks' notice, which is also Sandra Bullock, and that was Hugh Grant. Because while the plot's generic, it's got nice characters and vaguely interesting situations, and it doesn't beat you over the head with jokes. It just nice delivery, and it keeps you engaged, and it's lightheartedly entertaining the whole way through.
It's often what you need for a romantic comedy. Yeah, half the script's half the battle.
Yeah,
but then also you got like Sandra Bullock in it or someone like that. If their character, you know, like 2 weeks' notice, again, it's the script's never going to win any awards. But the two leads are good.
Yeah,
you know?
and they
win you along, don't they? That's half the battle.
And so it's true. Sandra Bullock, I don't quite believe as the cold-hearted, essentially bitch boss that she's meant to be.
Yeah.
But we don't see all that much of her before she starts softening up in Alaska a bit.
Right.
And then it becomes slightly more just her being a bit uncomfortable in Alaska, which is fair enough. And Ryan Reynolds, despite every fiber of my being wanting to hate him, I don't. I really like Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
Because I should hate him because he's irritatingly good looking and he's married to Scarlett
Johansson.
And that's just, she's mine. That's not true.
Yeah.
But no, but in a generic way, I say, no, he's rubbish. But he's actually, he can act, and he's got comic ability. And yeah, so he's actually quite well suited in this. And while you can pick holes in the plot of various aspects, it all wraps up a bit too neatly at the end. The revelation of how they really feel about each other comes a bit too quickly.
Right.
But it's all still, it's an enjoyable rom-com, and will get you through a couple of hours. Okay. And you'll laugh a bit, and you'll be carried along by it, and then go home and get on with your life.
Fair enough. Yeah.
How do you find it compared to Ryan Reynolds' last rom-com, Definitely Maybe, which I thought was, just as you described, I thought Ryan Reynolds was fantastic in the
movie. It was good, actually. Yeah. I enjoyed that one.
And I thought that was, I think it had the format, but it was still had some unpredictable sides to it, and the story was important, the characters were important.
Yeah, it's probably not as good as Definitely Maybe, because that's an unusual one, in that it's sort of three stories, and it's him talking to his daughter, so there's that level of emotion. But then this does have, it's sort of good from a family point of view, because rather than just, I mean, none of this is mentioned in the trailer, because it's all pretty much, the trailer is just Sandra Bullock saying, you have to marry me, it'll be hilarious, and that's pretty much it. Whereas once he actually gets to Alaska, then we find that he's got a huge family up there, and they're all very involved, they all love to see him, don't know much about his life, he doesn't get on with his dad, and there's good reasoning for that. His mother's concerned about not seeing him, so it builds up a sort of good family element to it all, which actually is quite involving. There's a decent amount of emotion in it beyond just the couple wondering what's going on there.
When I first saw the trailer for The Proposal, it did remind me a little bit of the trailer for New in Town, the Rennie.
Yeah,
Delmega
very
thing,
slightly.
Which I didn't see, to review based on the trailer as saying it's awful. It looks awful. It's probably awful.
Yeah.
So I was filled with a little bit of dread. Well, I saw the
no, because there's not too much. I mean, there are one or two bits of her being slightly out of place in a small town, but not too much. It's more it's more the family unit and how she, because she has no parents, no sisters, no brothers, no nothing, and then suddenly being dumped into this big, huge, loving family that she's not used to. So
is it fair to say, I've only seen the trailer and it wasn't mentioned in the trailer at all, but for me it seemed like the elephant in the room was not Sandra Bullock, the fact, is she a bit older than Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, that does come up as well. Yes, there is. Yeah, and I don't know how. I mean, I think Ryan Reynolds is give or take our age, depressingly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Sandra Bullock is probably 40.
Yeah, it must be about 10 years.
Yeah,
I'd have thought.
Yeah, and yes, that does to her. When she gets off the plane, her mum says something like, or his mum, so gives him a big hug and says, "Oh, where's your girl?" And then they turn around to see her struggling off the plane in her high heels, and then his grandmother, who's played by Betty White.
Oh, yes.
Just says, "Oh, I think girl might be misstating it slightly."
Right.
So they do address. I mean, they don't keep going on about it, but they at least address the fact.
Because I did sort of think when I saw the poster for this, and you see it's going to be a romantic comedy with those two in it, and part of me did just think, "Oh, bless Sandra Bullock." She sort of, she tried. She was in Crash. She was very good in Crash. I thought excellent. But she's tried to sort of have a little bit of a career away from the rom-com thing. But she always knows that that's her selling point. She's back to the rom-coms. Does this mean that she's getting to the age where she's sort of outgrowing rom-coms a bit? Because often, Ryan Reynolds is coming through as a young leading man of rom-com.
Yeah.
And suddenly she looks, and again, I don't want to be ageist at all here, but she looks like she doesn't quite fit in with this necessarily. But if it's addressed and she's the boss, I suppose it's excusable.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, at least they make enough, they address enough time to it. Yeah. At least just a few lines. She's the boss. He's definitely a junior.
Not that, of course. Just because she's getting a bit older, she doesn't need to stop making rom-coms. Because what all you need to do is make sure the male lead is a similar age.
Yes. So
make sure
they just, or address it like in this and just explain why that's... Because it's not... I mean, it may just be a slightly sexist thing, but like Jim Carrey and Zooey Deschanel, that's a far bigger age gap.
That should have been acknowledged.
That's
really.
Just a bit weird. That they should have acknowledged that.
Yes, man, that was.
It's an old man and a young girl, and it's just slightly odd.
There you go, there's about 15, 20 years between them, and it's not mentioned, and it's a bit creepy.
Yeah, and at least if you just mention it, then it's fine.
I saw the trailer this week for 500 Days of Summer.
Ah, yes.
With Zooey Deschanel. And
Zooey Deschanel,
yes. And the fella with the three names,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Well done,
I know my
Deborah Kara Unger.
my triple named people.
Good work.
And yet I can't remember. I can see it forming in my brain, even as I construct this sentence. I can't remember Elizabeth Shue and someone else's name at the same time.
Is it Jennifer Grey? No,
no, someone else from Back to the Future, who played his mum. You see?
Oh,
I can't do it.
You can't mention... If you hadn't mentioned Elizabeth Shue, I could do it.
I know.
Her name is... She was in Caroline in the City and...
Leah Thompson. You see?
Correct.
But only ever one at a time. Yes, the sexist point I was going to say earlier, that it does seem slightly weirder if it's the other way around.
Hmm.
As in Jim Carrey's Zooey Deschanel, a bit weird. Whereas Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds, that seems fine.
I wonder what the biggest age gap is between two romantic leads in films where it's not mentioned once.
I'm sure
that, you know, there are ones where that's the point of the film.
Yes.
Richard Gere and most other films he's been in.
True. Michael Douglas probably some of his films.
But there must be Jack Nicholson.
I know, I mean, in A View to a Kill probably comes up because Roger Moore was knocking on a bit by then.
Yeah, it's true.
Sean Connery.
Yes, Sean Connery and Catherine Zeta-Jones in Entrapment, you know.
Will
he die before he can...
He was her dad.
Yeah.
But I think they do mention the age difference there. Or maybe it's so obvious that you don't have to mention it in a weird way.
His lack of hair and greying hair.
Exactly. Well, yes. Didn't he go bald when he was like in his 20s?
Possibly. I think, yeah.
Didn't we all?
If you podcaster, you can think of a film where, you know, there's a big age gap and it's not really knowledge, email us in.
Yes,
podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Anyway, so that's a proposal. We digress slightly onto age gap. But yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, it's as is often the case with certain types of genre films. Mm. If you think you're going to like it, you probably will. If you're a rom com fan,
that's been your review of most films for the last.
Yeah,
five
I know,
weeks,
but it's, I know, but it's, it may just be summer season.
If you think you'll like it, you probably will.
No, but it's summer season. Like Moon, you've got to explain and say what's good. A rom com, you can generally say it's actually worth seeing. Yeah. If it was awful, I'd say just avoid it. Mm. But if you're a rom-com fan, you'll probably like this one, I think. If you're not, then stay well clear.
Yeah, fair enough.
My flatmate Gav, I wouldn't... You know, the fact that there are a couple of good gags in it wouldn't be remotely enough to persuade him to come and see this.
Yeah, if you like romantic comedies, go and see this romantic comedy. If you don't like romantic comedies...
Go and see something else.
Exactly. It's a good romantic comedy, but a bad horror film.
It's a decent example of the rom-com.
Not a bad one. Yeah. Good.
Yes, one film I did see last night was The Game.
Deborah Kara Unger.
Yes.
Indeed, yes.
Your favourite.
Hey,
big fan of Debs.
I like her.
But I'll only mention it because I haven't seen it in years. Just flicking around the TV, suddenly saw, The Game's on. I might as well watch that. Despite owning the DVD, it's one I'll rarely think, I'll watch that. I'm in the mood for a laugh and put that on. And it's David Fincher after he did Alien 3.
He'd done 7 by that point.
Of course he did 7 and then this and then Fight Club.
Yeah.
So it's sort of in the middle of two of his big ones. But it's Michael Douglas who leads a millionaire's existence and yet lonely and bored.
Mm.
And it's his birthday. His brother gives him a present of The Game.
Sean Penn, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, looking very, very young. And just gives him a card saying, call this number. Mm. You know, they'll
pretty
say
good time.
Yeah, well, pretty much, yeah. Just say, yeah, it'll be fun. Trust me. It's just that it's a game. It's tailored to you. And so he finally calls it. Well, actually, he goes to their offices and fills out lots of forms, gets told he's been turned down for the game. Yeah, that's a bit disappointing. And then comes home to find a dead clown on his driveway, and he realises, the game has begun.
Uh-huh.
So it starts off with him not knowing exactly what to expect, not being entirely happy the way it's going, and then things take a twist, and it all gets a bit more ominous.
Is it real? Is it not?
Well, yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, and there were more, slightly more twists and developments than I remember there being.
Mm.
But it's just, it's very involving the whole way through because you don't know exactly what's happening either. Yes. You don't know who to trust.
Yeah.
Don't know who's in on it. You don't know what's going on. Is it all actually a game? Are they actually trying to con him?
Mm.
Who's doing what? And yeah, I mean, it's quite long. It's longer than I was expecting or longer than I remembered. But it's just a very involving and very unusual film.
Yeah.
So it's worth a look.
I like those films. A bit of twisty, turny stuff.
Yeah.
I think actually the ending of that, is it a game or isn't it? think the answer is revealed on the T-shirt I have, which has 30 great endings of films ruined. I've worn it for a while. I might give it an airing this summer, wonderful. That'd be nice.
Yeah, but yes, because it's a twisty-turning ending without just pulling the rug out from under you. It's not quite, you know, it was all a dream, but some films can just have a twist that you think, oh, well, you've just thrown a twist
in. Not, this isn't a twist as such. It's a twist you know is going to be a twist, because the question is, is it a game or isn't it?
Yeah, and we just don't know.
And it's one or the other. Yeah. So it's just which one it is. You know?
Yeah, but it's nicely revealed, and it sort of keeps you guessing up until pretty much, well, not the last frame, but right at the end of the film. You're not sure. So, seek it out on DVD. Give it a watch.
Worth a look. Yes, later than planned in the episode. We normally do it a bit earlier on, but we'll do In This Week in Movie History.
Hey.
Oh, yes. This is when we take an event from movie history, and I'll give the event, you tell us when it was, really. Good. So we'll throw it open to the both of you. Jez, first time player, you confident?
Yes.
Good, well
excellent.
Done.
Excellent. Well
done. Right, In This Week in Movie History, I'll give you the date, the event, you tell me what the film was. Okay. July the 24th, 2004. Judgment Day, again, or not. But what was the film?
That's going to have to be...
Terminator 2?
I'm going to say Terminator 3.
Correct, Terminator 3. John takes it.
Terminator 2 put it at, I think, some point in August 1997.
This is the Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines version of Judgment Day that may or may not have happened.
I think that one actually did.
That one did happen.
Yeah.
I wish it didn't happen.
I think that's why I said or not, because I wasn't quite sure.
Actually, no, that one does.
Yeah. You wish it didn't happen.
Terminator 3.
Just didn't happen at all the entire thing. That would be nice. July 26th, 1996. George Malley sees a strange light from the sky and develops telekinesis. True story.
Strange light in the sky, telekinesis.
A strange light. And he gets strange special powers, including telekinesis.
Phenomenon with John Travolta?
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Phenomenon.
Well.
Bam, bam. No, correct, seen. Indeed.
Phenomenon.
One all. Indeed, one all. There you go. Cool, well done. Okay. July 28th, 1788. King George III begins to suffer mental illness.
The man is King George.
Oh, so we'll call that a draw. We'll call that a draw. Very good indeed. Of course, not called The Mad as King George III, because then people would wonder what happened to parts 1 and 2.
Yes.
July the 30th, 1966. England beat West Germany in the FIFA World Cup final. July the 30th.
Escape to victory.
66. It's not on this occasion. This it may not be a film that you're familiar with. It's an English film that came out, I think, a year or two ago over the summer. And it was one of these that sort of came and went pretty quickly. I think it had Helena Bonham Carter in it and Catherine Tate. Was in it. Actually, Helen Bonham Carter may not be in it.
I can only think of a film called The Beautiful Game, but I don't think that's...
No, it's a film called 66. It's about a kid who...
Having a bar mitzvah.
On the same day as World Cup final.
So
it's still a draw. So it's everything to play for on the last one.
Oh, is this the final one?
Here's the final one now. Ah, this will be an interesting one. Okay, interesting one. July the 31st, 1980, Harry Potter is born.
I can only assume Philosopher's Stone.
You're going for Philosopher's Stone, Jez? I'll give you a clue. It's a Harry Potter film. But can you guess which one?
I'll go for The Prisoner of Afghanistan.
The Prisoner of Afghanistan. Okay, you're both wrong. Do you want to take another go? It's not Philosopher's Stone. It's not Azkaban.
Chamber of Secrets.
Chamber of Secrets. John, are you going for?
I might as well go for...
I'll give you a clue. It doesn't matter, because Chamber of Secrets is correct.
Oh,
there you go. Jez takes it on a guess. So a hollow victory, I like to think, really.
Sorry, John, my first visit to the adventure.
And your last.
There you go. There you go.
Never again.
Showing Jez the door there. Oh. There we go. So that was...
See you, everyone. Bye-bye.
That was In This Week in Movie History, and which will return another time. And one last thing to wrap up, then, is our final feature, which we like to do, which is called Desert Island Flicks.
Yes.
So we take a genre or type of film, favourite ones. So it's the short version. And this week we're going for best franchise.
No, most consistent franchise.
I always forget
that
one. It's
a slightly different thing.
Do you want to start the ball rolling, then?
Well, it's a weird one, because for me, there are two candidates, and there's sort of one obvious one and one less obvious one.
Okay.
And I may leave the obvious one
right
for someone else to use.
Oh, I don't know what the obvious one is, then.
Well, because I'm the one that always occurs to me, and it's not. This is why I was saying most consistent rather than best.
Setting up the rules here for something.
It's the Lethal Weapon films,
right?
Which is like because
is that the obvious one, or the...
No, that's the less obvious one.
Okay.
And it's sort of me going slightly off on a tangent, but it's just one that I quite like because I think all four films, while you may not like them, and they're not heavyweight Oscar-winning things, but all four films are all good. I would say. The first two are slightly more serious, the second two are slightly sillier and more family friendly, but they're all solid entertaining action fare.
Yeah.
With sort of good buddy comedy thing, bit of comedy, quite involving. And it's fought consistently across four films. And I think it's I'm hard pushed to think of another film that's had four instances of it that are all at least quite good.
Yes.
That doesn't have a serious drop off. I mean, Die Hard, I mean, lots of people like you, like yeah, I said, yeah. People would say the fourth one, oh dear. I quite like the fourth one, I can see that point.
Not a bad action film, just not a good Die Hard film. I know that's the difference.
Yeah, and I can see that point. So that's what I'm going to say. Lethal Weapon, Lethal Weapon films.
Fair enough.
I can give you a hint with the obvious one I'll mention it.
Leave it for a minute, and then we'll see if we. I'm struggling. I've got a couple of ideas. Should I fire them out now, or do you want a bit more thinking time, Jez, or do you want to put one out there?
Clear winner for me. Lord of the Rings is the most consistent.
See, that's the obvious one.
The Hobbit, obviously, as the prequel.
Ah, very true.
Which I like the choice since there was all the legal shenanigans.
That's blimmin' huge.
Anyway, we've got slightly distracted. Yes,
going because a giant bee came across the
room. We're going to have to edit around the giant bee. Yeah. But going from sort of halfway through a sentence and they're suddenly recoiling from. Seriously, it was a huge bee.
Huge bee.
I mean, we are not, I'm assuming, we're not really easily frightened. We're not frightened men. But when an enormous bee comes through, that's probably a good inch and a half, 2 inches long.
It was bigger than us.
It was the size of your head, easily.
Easily.
I think it was a man in a bee suit. I don't think it's Jen sneaking back in again.
It's like, it was as if the Simpsons had come to life and the man in the bee suit was running, falling over. No, it was enormous. Anyway, so we had to trap that and get it out.
That's why our tangent suddenly went off on one there.
Yeah, so apologies if the editing. Anyway, but
Lord of the Rings,
I think, had real continuity across the three films. I think one of the key things being same director, and I believe all three films were made in a very similar timescale, so they had the continuity of the cast and the direction.
I think they had one huge shoot, and then they'd had various reshoots sort of picking up afterwards before each film. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's probably as mammoth as an effort as you're ever going to get for one trilogy. Yeah.
I'm very excited too about The Hobbit, and liking the choice as well, going back to saying for Peter Jackson. I think there's been some sort of legal shenanigans about why he is not doing The Hobbit. I'm not sure of the exact details. I can't remember what it was, but
he's got a hand in somewhere, isn't he? Is he like an advisor?
Executive producer or something.
Is he clapperboard fellow? Is he just doing focus puller? Isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. Best boy. Yeah.
Best boy.
Yeah. There was some weird thing
back, but just do that
because he had new line issues with sort of what he's got paid for the Lord of the Rings films or something. So I don't know if he didn't want to do it because of that, or if they didn't want him because of that, or if he was just busy doing something else. But there was definitely something weird going on. But Guillermo del Toro is going to be good.
He's and good. I think that's a good choice. Having seen Pan's Labyrinth, I'm very impressed with Hellboy 2.
Yeah.
And actually watching Hellboy 2, seeing some of the shots, and just thought, actually, that would transfer very neatly to a Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah. No, fair point. You've got to find... Oh, I'm a bit jealous now. You picked that one, because I can't.
I'm surprised you're not going to go with your obvious.
Well,
one.
Back to the Future.
Well, yeah,
is really what I'm thinking, but I can't go back because we picked that for too many things before, really.
But if the shoe fits,
the shoe does fit. I'm the only other thing I'm tempted by now. I do definitely prefer Back to the Future and Lord of the Rings actually to this one, but I was going to say maybe the Bourne films.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Because in terms of consistency, they are consistent, I think, and they do hold up together. And there's again no drop off really. I think they only improve.
It's very unusual. Actually,
for me, that whole the chase at Waterloo Station, I thought was as exciting as any, you know, exotic chase in a Bond movie where they go to some exotic location. And this is just in Waterloo, which I go to most weeks, really. Yeah. And in fact, I like the fact actually we mentioned earlier the Empire magazine Spielberg special. And they had the interviews with directors in that, and they asked the same questions to all these different directors. And they asked, "Is Paul Greengrass directs those?"
Yes, that's right.
They asked him the most exciting location he's ever filmed in. Mm. Everyone else was going like, Costa Rica and the Great Plains in this country and all that. And he said Waterloo Station. That was just the best location he's ever been in.
Okay.
I think again because probably like me and like many of us, he's there quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it's a familiar place, and he's there thinking, we couldn't possibly do it in here, could we? Oh yeah, we could. And also they filmed it largely with the entire station completely open.
They just had to ask people to hold back and avoid
exactly
get them out of focus so they couldn't see them staring.
The fact that he pulled it off, I think, is incredible.
Yeah,
really.
Very true.
So I'm going to go with the Bourne films.
It's a fine choice.
So I'll go with those.
I think that's a lot.
That is the lot indeed. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Jez, for joining us.
Thank you very much
for having me.
And if you've got, as we say, any feedback, then podcast@moviebanter.co.uk is the email address. You follow us on Twitter. We've got a Facebook fan page.
Very true.
We're on most of the media.
Yeah. If we're missing out any of the obvious new media things,
we're
then,
not on Bebo,
then let us know.
But,
not on Bebo. No, that's for kids. Not on MySpace.
Wikipedia,
that's,
yeah.
I don't think we have a Wikipedia page.
I've got a slight complaint, actually. I'm if you look for Paul Carenza on Wikipedia, I'm still in red.
Oh, really?
And I've always been determined I'm not going to do my own Wikipedia page. But if anyone out there wants to do one, make me happy.
Because also, the problem you run, of course, is that if you do one, because then someone will just sail and say, oh, I don't know if this is, you know, he's not necessarily famous enough to have a Wikipedia page.
Exactly, that would have hurt.
Well, yeah, because I don't have a Wikipedia page, my website does. Right. Because the members of my site did it.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that was a little bit, for a while, that had a sort of, oh, is this, does this really warrant it? And they put in lots of references to sort of where it's quoted and other things.
Okay.
So I thought, oh, okay, so that's worth having. So if you get people out there who can find references to you and say, look, he's a comedian, he's done this and this and this, then
there's about
you'll 12
different pages on Wikipedia which have my name on it.
Oh, there you go.
With different writings and that sort of thing. But
And like, you know, Chalk, you've got five Edinburgh shows,
Edinburgh shows,
exactly. So people out there, go on.
Someone, if anyone does it, I'll buy you a drink next time I see you.
Fair enough.
Probably not, won't see you, but you know, but the thoughts there.
Yeah, they can seek you out.
I'll email you a drink. Okay, so anyway. But yeah, do tune in next time on Movie Banter, and we will talk banter some more on movies.
Yes, and who knows what we'll be talking about next week?
Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know what films are out. We'll find out.
We'll find some.
Yes. Yeah. In the meantime, have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.